Because to me, the thing where creatives can get in their heads the most is like overthinking, freaking out, closing the project and just being like, I can't do it. Giving up too quickly, when really it's like, just keep going and then go to sleep. That's why I like to work late sometimes if I'm really like, so just like having a hard time. Is like, do about 3 hours solid, maybe two, like get just a bunch of good ideas down on paper, even if they look terrible to you now, and just go to sleep. The fairies fix it at night.
They do. Fairies.
Oh my gosh. Look at it in the morning and you're like, this is gold.
Welcome to the Creative Brief. Today you're in for a real treat. I sit down with the sensational Jen and Amy Hood of Chutzpah Design, a boutique design studio in Southern California with a dream client roster, with clients like Nike and Disney and Adobe and SeatGeek, just to name a few. We talk about how they diversify their business, how they handle being design influencers, and I get them to reveal some of their secrets of how they spark their design creativity. Now, if you haven't discovered Jen and Amy yet, you're about to meet your new favorite design duo. But if you're longtime fans like me, I did my best to cover some territory with them that they don't usually talk about. It's a great episode, and I'm really glad you're here for it. I'm Brian Athey, and this is The Creative Brief. Amy and Jen Hood, welcome to The Creative Brief. I'm so excited to have y'all from sunny SoCal. Y'all are in SoCal today, right?
Yes, we are. Okay. Can I just say, like, you're like the Tony Romo. Also, I feel like you look like Tony Romo. You're all the right. Tony Romo of podcasting, because I feel like he always does such good commentary, you know?
I thought he crushed the Super Bowl. I thought that, like, did y'all watch? Of course, you had to watch, right?
We kept toggling between Nickelodeon and the actual stream because the mainstream kept getting glitchy for us. So then we'd, like, go over to Dora and SpongeBob, and then we come back.
Did you watch the SpongeBob stream? Everybody kept telling me that there was, like, a SpongeBob stream that was coming in better than...
Yes, it was. The feed was better. But SpongeBob, I have to say, they did this amazing face mapping. I don't know if Island was involved or who, but this face mapping. So pretty much there was someone in a chair that was a regular human. And then the live, like,
oh, do you think that's what it was?
VR or whatever. I don't even know what they wouldn't be VR, but whatever was like mapping SpongeBob on it because he would move. And the thing you could tell that it was kind of just like adapting to what he would say in real time. Mm. But I have to say that guy, whoever they hired, like he was not keeping up with the like just off the cuff banter. And the other two like real human hosts would like say little funny comments and he'd be like, you know, in that voice. And I'm like,
SpongeBob, this is supposed to be about you. Say something, SpongeBob.
This is your moment.
Live here.
Yeah. Oh man, it was so funny though. And then Patrick would just be like, dirt. You know, it was like, they kind of like dropped the ball, but the other two guys were doing a good job. Yeah.
That was a good Patrick impression though. That was good. I am very jealous of the, I guess the weather and the setup and the vibes out in California. I talked to y'all a little bit before this podcast about like going out to California was my dream graduating school. I did an internship at Chiat Day in Marina Del Rey, like my last year of school. And I thought, that's it for me. Like, I've got to get out there. And life happens, and I didn't have anybody to go out there with. It's actually a funny story. I went to California that summer with no friends. The summer before, I took my best buddy. But that summer was, like, super lonely. I was living in Hollywood and making the commute every day to Marina Del Rey. Oof. And decided, all right, if I can't convince anybody to go to California with me, I'm not going to go. I'll go to New York. So I spent 3 weeks in New York that summer, and it was a brownout. It was like 100 degrees every day. And when it's like that, there's no air conditioner in the restaurants.
There's no
air conditioner in the you're just hot all the time when you sleep.
It's so nasty.
When you eat. And so I was like, it's not going to be New York either. So I never followed through with that California dream. I never got to go out there. I'm so like, y'all paint the picture of my dream sometimes when I look at your work and when I see you show up on podcasts and events. Like, what got y'all out there? Like, what was the drive to embrace that vibe?
Oh my gosh. Well, I think we were lucky because we were actually born here. I know we say we're from Kentucky all the time, but we were born here, lived here till we were five because our dad and mom both moved out here and met here. And So we are from here. And so our dad always stayed here after our parents got divorced. So we would visit every summer. So it was always like, how do we get back? How do we get back there? It's so beautiful. Like just going to the beach all the time.
And y'all have figured out like your own, like California is almost your brand, at least in my mind. I see that video that y'all had cut. That's like, you're in the Mercedes and you're walking along the pier and it's like, y'all have figured out a way to marry your brand with that California brand in like a very bespoke way, and I love it.
I'd love to hear you say that.
A lot of people say that.
I love that. You know, rest in peace to that Mercedes, by the way. I finally had to sell it. It was such a money pit.
Oh no, it's not around anymore.
No, I had to sell it. It was just like I gave myself a number of like, I will put this much into fixing this thing, and I kept thinking like, eventually it'll be like everything will be redone. It'll be cherry. That never happens. That's such a naive pipe dream. If you have a classic car, it's like it constantly needs something.
Right.
But yeah.
Oh, no. That was like driving on a cloud. It was like riding grandma's sofa through the streets. It was so comfortable.
And people treat you like you're the queen. Like kids wave. Like people are just smiling and happy. Like it's just like whenever you see a classic car, you're just like, everyone gives you a thumbs up. You're like, I didn't do anything to deserve this.
I don't appreciate about it. Certain classic car owners who have like the most insanely beautiful classic car. And you're like waving because like that's what you do when you say something beautiful, especially on the road. You're like, good job, buddy. Like I'm always like waving at people with classic cars, like, yes, you did this. And the people who ignore you, like they don't know they're driving around in the most amazing vehicle. I'm like, what did you do this for? If not for the attention. 100%. Like, why are you here? 100%.
Do y'all see, like, when people come to you, I can only imagine what your process is like. But I have this like picture in my head, only because I've gotten to hang out with y'all and y'all are like the most fun people in the world, that like when clients come to you, it has to feel like they've found this diamond in the rough. Like y'all work with some of the biggest names. That this is the neat thing about Chutzpah, is that y'all work with these huge names and you have this very like corporate appeal, but you're such a boutique shop. So when people come in, it's got to feel so comfortable. It's got to feel like the best.
I hope so, because that is like the thing, right? It's like there's nothing like going to your local diner, your local bar, your local coffee shop where they know your name and it's like you kind of know the regulars and you know the hidden menu, you know, all that kind of stuff.
That's right.
So I definitely, we both worked service industry. Did you, Brian, work service industry?
I still have nightmares about service industry. I waited tables 4 years.
Oh, yeah. Forgetting an order, like getting an order wrong or like forgetting a table.
Like getting in the weeds and like I still can see the hostess's eyes when she runs over and she's like, I'm so sorry. I just had to seat you again. And you've already gotten double.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Yes. There's no quicker path to alcoholism than being a server.
Like, it's like how you all relate to each other, because in the service industry, it's like all races, creeds, like socioeconomic backgrounds, ages, but like you all find like you find it in common in the bottle. You know what I mean?
Brian, everybody's
just like, do you want to go drink after this show?
Trauma bonding.
Wait, where did y'all wait tables?
Okay, did the corporate thing.
Well, no, I did Culture Kitchen. I did a bunch little mom and pop shops. And then I was server of the year at California Pizza Kitchen at the Urban Spectrum. I'm just saying.
Of course you were. I bet so. I bet so.
And then I did I worked at a coffee shop in San Clemente called Kehlani's. Okay. But the reason I brought that up is because like I feel like you can always tell when someone's done service industry job because they understand customer service and how important that is. And I think it's just like there's so much to be said about just making someone feel taken care of. And it's I saw the headline. I'm going to quote somebody in an article that I haven't read at all, but I read the headline and it feels appropriate.
Yeah, that's the best kind of quote.
Yeah. Anytime I say I read an article, I didn't. I read the headline and I'm just going to tell you like I think I am.
I saw this article on TikTok in the background 100%. And
I read an article is code for I saw a TikTok. It's just, that's how it is. But no, yes. I saw Elizabeth Goodspeed, who just started working at It's Nice That. She wrote an article that was like, I'm going to butcher this, but it was like graphic design is a service industry job or something like that. Mm. It was like, it's a hospitality job.
Yeah.
And I fully agree with that. It's like, you know, you were saying the boutique kind of thing. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, at first when we were young, we were really worried, but like, we're too small, we have to grow. And then we grew and we realized that we were like, basically just managing. We hate managing. We want to be doing the creative work.
That's right.
So I think pretty soon you realize like, no, like we can be a boutique agency and do really cool stuff and just be like four people who do really great work. Like, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. And I think like you were saying, there's something nice about, I mean, with agencies, you have a lot of turnover. Yeah. Like, I mean, people are there for maybe a year max, you know, and it's just so churn and burn because it's just such a rigorous experience. But with us, I mean, people are coming back and here we are 11 years later,
still here, 12 people.
Whatever it is, you know?
That's right. No trauma bonding happening.
No trauma bonding. There's always trauma bonding. Cause it's like deadlines happen. And despite your best planning efforts to get everything like to where you're not overloaded, eventually there's like the perfect Bermuda Triangle of like deadlines all at once.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And those times are rough.
I feel you. It always seems like when everything is about at 80% and you know that like that 20% hard part is still there. But then when there's more than one or two of those all at once, like that's the equivalent of getting triple sat.
100%. We had that a couple years ago, and it was like, this was also the time when we got a really big Nike project, and we had done one Nike project before, but the pandemic killed it. And it was like an LA marathon, really fun, like Nike capsule with Diego. Nice. And it was like, so it was like already that one had gotten killed. Everyone loved it. It never got released because there was no marathon. And then we get another like huge project, and the timeline was just unhinged. And so it was like that mixed with pushing three other projects over the finish line, which is what you're saying, which that last 20%, I don't know what it is about
that. It's the hardest part.
But you start to second guess every decision you've made up to that point.
Yeah.
And, but you've already sold it. You've already had the presentation sold. So they love it. But like now you're thinking like, maybe I just changed the whole font system.
Right. You're like, how do I convince them to change everything?
Or you've delivered all the final files and you zoom in and like one letter that on your custom lettering has like a weird pixel off and you're like,
oh my God.
Do I let them know?
You
always redo it. But if you're like, hey, remember those files I just sent you? I hope you didn't send it off to get a sign fabricated because there's one rogue pixel that needs to be fixed. Or not.
Well,
or
like y'all have also dealt with the scrutiny of, who loves y'all? The under consideration team, the brand new team. Like,
I'm obsessed with brand new.
I love them, but they can be a very harsh audience.
That's why I love them.
And I feel like every time y'all have been up, it's been like accolades. It's been like, this is how you do
untrue.
It.
Untrue. You've got to go back to the first one.
Don't tell them, Jen. Well, I don't want them to go back and read it.
What happened?
I would just say there was a lot of extenuating circumstances. Is that how you say it?
Extenuating.
Yeah. Anyways, there was things. There's feedback and input. Yeah.
There was context. And I will say that we did not submit it to brand new. We didn't even know it was done. They had taken some initial, I'm not going to say. Anyways, initial concepts that had not been finished were vectorized, live traced, and things were added that we didn't know about. And then it was signed, sealed, delivered. But
I think it was work for hire. So it was like totally their right to do it.
It was totally their right to do it.
And it was just kind of like, we didn't even know that it was getting submitted. And then you wake up to just a barrage of, this is the worst trash I've ever seen in my life comments on Twitter. No.
Yes,
we were so young. We were so green.
We didn't even know what brand new was. We were like, what's happening right
what
now?
What is this backlash?
But it was honestly the best thing that could happen because it gives you that hunger, that rage. One day we'll show them. I'm gonna get back on Ben Affleck in that Dunkin' commercial.
Yes, Brian's gonna go find that article.
I've got it up in a corner right here. Click here if you want to.
Yes, it's on the YouTube. It's just like we actually kept some of them. It was like some of the comments were so mean and so funny. That's the other thing I really like about it is I think there's something really special about creatives who can get over harsh feedback. Because you start to, like, as you get further on in your career, you start to be able to decipher between, like, the just straight up, like, trolls and then, you know, straight up, like, well, they just don't understand how hard it is to get stuff approved and how, like, we're not the only ones who have input. The client has input. And also, there are constraints that you have to consider. Like, people are like, it would have been better if it's this. It's like, that wouldn't work for A, B, C, and D, but you weren't in the discovery meeting. So, of course,
Sometimes the feedback's really good. I'm like, that would have been good.
We should have done that. But it's like, there's many right answers. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. Well, it's like being in the room is half the battle a lot of the times. Like, being in the room and like understanding all those circumstances, like, when you're looking at a design solution, you really have to think about all the parts of the equation. They didn't just come to somebody in the comment section and say, tear this one apart and make it better. It was a whole process that was there. And I guess that's kind of going back to that process that I was talking about. Like, y'all are the pioneer. Here's what I would say about Fabus, which is, I was looking for my copy of it. I couldn't find it. I think it's still in a moving box, but freelance and business and stuff. Hold it up for me. Like, y'all took the initiative a while back.
I'm going to pull a Bill Kenny. He had the book so ready. He was like, right here.
Can people still find that on the website?
Okay, so we're releasing a second edition. So we didn't order another set of books, but we're going to have to because we're past our deadline and we'll never finish it.
Well, I had been freelancing for, I think, at least going on 10 years when the book came out, and I still read it and learned so much. And I think that what y'all figured out how to do was like create all these systems and contracts and proposals and presentation decks and walk people through a very kind of deliberate and intentional process. And I was just wondering if you'll peel back the curtain for me a little bit and admit that it doesn't always go that way. Like, oh, what no, is 100%. The what's the boutique scenario like? What it's actually like to work with y'all? Is it that linear, or are you just swinging vine to vine?
I would say honestly, because it's service based and everybody's different, it so depends on the client. And you kind of get a sense, you always start with your process because that's honestly the framework. And it's like gives you the best chance for success. But you learn pretty quickly how the client works. And sometimes it'll end up being a client where you're much more available to them, like on the fly on Slack, which is not always like the best. It just depends, right?
Yeah.
Like we have a project right now where we're with the client like almost every other day, commenting and asking questions and like giving updates in Slack.
And it's amazing. So easy. It's so amazing. Easy to iterate. It's like there's so many things up in the air that it's like so nice to have that kind of fast response.
Whereas I will say
on other things, it's like you would never want that. Yeah. You know?
And it's like we don't do that like from the get-go. Like I think the one thing you can't sacrifice is that proper like discovery, getting to know you, getting to know all about you, that kind of thing.
Perfect.
You got to take your time with that.
Do we have the money to get the rights for that use? Yeah.
Like, turn around. Do we have that kind of podcast budget? Yeah. That's right.
But you can't skimp on that because
you can't. That part is so important. And when people are like, we don't need the discovery, we started just baking it in. Like you can't take it out of the budget. Yeah.
There's no price on the line item. The price is divided into all the other phases so that they can't take it out. But I mean, that's the one thing you can't skimp on. But other than that, like afterwards you do, I think it always goes fine up until the initial three concepts of the logo. Because when you do brand visual identity, like the logo is the first key point. It is usually like the first look creative that people see. And that's when it's like either you have a good omen for things to come, or it's like you realize, okay, this won't be exactly what we thought.
This is going to be one of those.
Yeah, yeah, right. More communication is needed to really make sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
So I work at an agency, but I also do freelance. And at the agency, we try and be very formulaic. Not necessarily an assembly line, but we want people to be predictable and we want to be able to price that predictably and we want to be able to do it at a certain time. But I, when I freelance, am addicted to just texting my clients now. So like those discovery phases are kind of like a first date. And like at an agency, a discovery phase is like a list of questions and workshops and exercises. But when I'm freelancing, it's like, you know, I'm usually in a sprint model and I'm asking them like, what's going to be a win for you? Here's how I can get you there. And on those first couple of dates, you kind of decide like, are we going to be able to do this? Like, is this going to be like a comfortable, like good working relationship, or is this going to be really strained and difficult? You kind of get there, get their vibe. And that's when I just loved, like, I'll be working on stuff and I'll text, and the right client, this is pro tip to any client. If you are enthusiastic and get excited before you give the feedback, whether it's positive or negative, it will keep that momentum going and we'll keep texting and sending stuff. I'll get so excited to work on something versus the like somebody that will ghost you. Again, a whole lot like dating. So
so true. It's honestly the best. It's like the best analogy.
Right.
We used to give a talk and then it just felt so inappropriate, but it was like, it's like, client relations is just like dating. And then we would tell horror stories of our personal dating lives and equate it to like business lessons. It was like,
and we were like, wait a minute, this is being filmed.
Yeah.
This is a terrible idea. We should not do this.
But you're so right. I feel like that's the thing that you learn the more that you kind of like work for yourself or, you know, try to court these bigger clients and things like that, I think is just like trying to find how people like to communicate and trying to meet them there so that, because if the communication is going smoothly, everything else follows.
Yeah.
That's how I feel anyway.
I think if you're pricing it to where you have wiggle room to where you won't be completely put out if you have to be a little more flexible.
Yeah.
That's always the goal, because it's like, I don't know.
There's always going to be hiccups. Like
there is. And I think if you can be flexible on a few things early on to show them you're working with them and you're trying to meet them halfway, then you can kind of like win back rapport and like trust for maybe down the road, as long as it's like an equal trade. Like a lot of times people will like change their mind or realize that like, after having seen this, we're realizing we want more of X, Y, or Z. It's like, well, okay, we can go back to the drawing board, but let's just like swap out some of these later round revisions, which you might not need, you know, cause we'll be closer along for some new concepts so that we're not like, you know, just shooting our budget in the foot, but also trying to work with them. And it's almost like being a server where, you know, they ask for the first, they don't like what they got. And they're like, I'm so sorry, I really don't like this. It's like, if you comp that first meal and give them a new one without charging them, it's like, you could be their best friend for life. They'd be coming back forever.
Yeah.
totally. It's like when they ask for the second replacement meal, it's like, now you're cut. Now you're cut. Yeah, now I'm going to enforce your scope.
Y'all give a ton of that great advice in the book too. And it was always so interesting to me to frame it in the context of like, it always seemed like y'all were having a conversation. So like, sure, you had your proposal and your scope and sure you had your budget, but as the project went on, you always addressed a lot of the back and forth with kind of this context of like, hey, by this point you should have comfortable communication set up. You should be able to say where the boundaries are. You should be able to adapt and evolve. I think that that's like, that's such an interesting thing that y'all have been able to figure out. And then you see the clients on y'all's logo farm, you see the places that you've worked. And I wonder if there's ever a way for that to translate to those big places, or if they feel like they have to be so formulaic that they don't appreciate kind of a comfortable conversation. Like, do they always hold your feet to the fire, or can they enjoy the benefits of a boutique experience sometimes? How do y'all set that up?
Yeah, I feel like we've had a few of the bigger clients recently say like, you know, we're always worried because when we get some of these like emails where they're like, hey, we'd love to get a quote, you know, or we're courting a couple agencies, like we want you to, you know, to quote us on this rebrand. And we always assume we're going up against like the big players like Pentagram and like stuff like that. And sometimes I'm surprised they're like, no, we specifically asked only small to medium sized companies because like we want people who have interesting, unique ideas and we want to work closely, you know, like with the creatives. We don't need a bunch of overhead. And that is one of the things that everyone's realizing about a lot of these big bloated agencies. It's a lot of budget for just, you know, like catered lunches and like four assistants on the shoot and stuff like that, where it's like you kind of start to realize like maybe all that stuff, it doesn't really mean it's going to be successful or interesting or unique, you know?
Well, I think the era of like vanity design is kind of over, where companies used to kind of like brag about their budgets and their teams and like, we're using this agency. I think people are starting to like really tighten. We've all seen it. They're starting to tighten the purse strings. It's like the glory days. It was good while it lasted.
Whoever got that bag, good for them. But
yeah, if you got that tech salary or, you know, got that tech job while it was happening, like, cool. But I think it is coming to a time where
it's just going to be more competitive. So it's like, I think the smaller
agile
teams
studios
who can do more with a smaller budget are obviously going to it's going to be hard to not go with teams like that. So, but I was going to say, we've always been I can only think of a handful of projects where we weren't blessed with like amazing teams on the other side who were just so, just like you said, where like, if they give feedback or something, they always preface with, thank you so much for all the hard work. And then they go into the edits, you know, like
not always, but
I mean, for the most part, I feel like we've had some really great,
we have
collaborators there. Of course, there's always outliers. We've had a couple projects where we just had to say like, I just don't think this is a good fit. Your process seems to be like, let's just throw everything at the wall and Google stuff. And like, you send us like Adobe stock stuff. And then it's just like, that's just not how we're going to work well, you know, because we really do. We want it to be based around story and we want there to be a meaning. And we want when they reveal it to their audience, whether it's, you know, the internal team or the externally facing team, like people are stoked and they're like, yes, that's so clever. I see the story. Like there's a purpose, there's a meaning. I'm excited. Not just like, oh, well, the CEO is a really hands-on CEO and he really liked this thing that he Googled. So we just kind of like ripped that off, you know, like, and that's kind of where some of these projects go. It's just like, everyone starts out being like, we care about story, we care about brand values. And you learn pretty quickly who is honestly saying that and who is just saying that because everyone says that. Yeah, so
that's true.
Yeah.
I think, you know, y'all have figured out this nice balance and you figured out how to do it in a way like telling that story, I guess, is what made me think of this. But you figured out a way to do it very comprehensively. So when I see y'all's work, for anybody that hasn't checked out Chutzpah Design Studio? I forget the URL.
Chutzpahdesign.com.
Chutzpahdesign.com.
New site coming soon.
Hey, you heard it here. So for anybody who hasn't, anybody who hasn't checked out their work, and I don't know who I'm talking to at this point, because I think everybody has, there is a level of quality of craftsmanship. You get the look, but you also get the copy and you get sort of this cohesion through everything that feels like you had hundreds of hands on this project. Like you had all the assistants at the shoot and you had all the extra people that are kind of in the wings waiting to get called in to do the copy or come up with the tagline. It's like smart and it's fun and it has enough personality that your brands are are easy for me to recognize without being super derivative. It's like when I see you show up on Brand New, it's like, I think that's Amy and Jen. And then I'll open it up and they'll have that feeling. And so I've always really appreciated that about y'all, but I'm curious now, is that what are you still focused on the brand clients, or do y'all do so much? Like, what does the business look like right now?
Yeah. We are focused predominantly on brand identity work, and we still have like big goals of like those bucket list things you want to check off, you know?
Yeah.
And I would say, so like 50% of our studio side is definitely logos, brand, like new clients, core visual identity, like refresh or from scratch. And then maybe 30% is like retainer and people who we've already worked with coming back for little things here and there and just continuing on the brand.
Or just our like tried and true steady, like we have two really big retainer clients mm-hmm. that are awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, gotcha.
And awesome. Then the other stuff is just like sundry extras that we might do. Well, like this year is the year of illustration for us. We've had so many requests for brand illustration, which is so fun. We love doing illustrations. Really? So that one's come up. But yeah.
That's coming back.
Yeah, I know. So that's interesting. But yeah, I mean, brand identity, and then we've recently started, you know, the foray into, you know, fonts, custom type. So then there was like the segue into brand typography, because then brand fonts was like, the new thing to add to the brand kit. But they're so expensive and time consuming. So it's like it rarely comes to fruition. And honestly, people rarely need it.
Their own custom typeface.
Yeah, yeah, a custom typeface. But we can. And it's on the list of services.
Awesome. It's so fun when it works. Like, yeah.
From the creators of Beverly Drive. Like, I see Beverly Drive everywhere. I still see that everywhere. I'm in Texas and I see it everywhere.
Oh, but I love that. I know. When we used to fly for like conferences and stuff, like I used to see Palm Canyon Drive everywhere. And now I'm like, I can't wait for Beverly Drive to be that. And then Redondo after it. Like, it's so rewarding.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to look back at text or DMs, because I think I sent y'all so many, like seeing it in the wild, that it got a little awkward. I was like, I probably should like take
never,
it easy.
Never, Brian, never. Text them to me every time. I love it. It's like you, Andrew Brigina, Charlie Wagers. Like, I have a couple of friends that are just like, I spotted it here. And I'm like, thank you. Like, this is it literally makes my day. What do you say? Yeah. Like, there's like so fun about seeing how somebody else takes like a piece of something that you made and like riffs on it. Like, it's got to be kind of like with sampling, except for, I guess they don't get royalties, so maybe they're pissed about that. I don't know. But, you know, it's like, it's just like seeing how somebody remixes something is very cool.
Sure, it depends. Yeah.
Yeah. But, and now we're on Adobe font. So I'm like, now we're really going to see like how people use it, because it's going to be, you know, so many people can easily turn it on and just sync it and run with it. So I'm
so
super
like,
excited for that.
It's diversification for y'all. Like, I don't know how, so you run the retainers and then the new business at the agency. You're making fonts like side hustle that end up blowing up and becoming like ubiquitous. And then they end up on Adobe fonts, but you also have figured out this, I'm probably going to call you something that y'all don't like to be called, but there's a little bit of like influencer vibes that y'all have cultivated. Like when I asked yesterday, like I'm interviewing my favorite design duo in the industry, everybody was like, "Oh, it's the Hood Sisters." Like, duh.
DK. They were like, "It has to be Hoodsburg, DK and G." And I was just like, amazing.
He got it on the first try.
That's crazy.
That's right. It's got to be the Hood Sisters. So it's like, y'all
sometimes when you say
out,
that's right, I think, is Matthew McConaughey on the other line?
I'm not that cool. Thank you for that. You're trying to make me blush on camera, and I don't appreciate that. No, thank you. I would love to be. What is the line? Be a lot cooler if I was. I'd be a lot cooler if I was. No, thank y'all. I really am blushing at this point. You made me lose my train of thought. But come on. How y'all have figured out how to position yourselves as, like, were you always public speakers? Were you always like, you know, student body president and in the That's on the you know, theater
no.
you know, lead
That's
actress
weird
thing like that?
No, not really. Like, we didn't really do it. It's not like we took like what's the
Toastmasters.
Toastmasters. Although my friends Jenny or Jenna Freitas or Kelly Freitas, they're like another twin duo from Boston that are like doing like some really great design work. But she's literally doing Toastmasters to learn how to be a better public speaker, and I thought that was so great.
I love that.
And like, I think that's so smart, because we have had so many great things come from just doing podcasts or doing speaking.
Mm-hmm.
And it really starts out small. You just say yes to like a small group in your local community, whether it's like AIGA or a portfolio review.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like that can lead to so many cool things.
Yeah.
And
do you get nervous still?
Oh yeah.
It's so weird. You get nervous, but then it's like,
It's like when you do karaoke and at first you're like, no, I don't want to do any. And then you go on and they cannot peel you off that stage. Like you become such a glutton for, I need the lights. You know? I need
the lights. But, I don't do karaoke unless it's these three songs in the key of F. Unless it's,
I need a warm glass of water for my vocal cords.
No, my theory is because we're twins, like I find that everything that happens to me, I need like to constantly tell someone what I think about it and get feedback in the moment in real time. I'm like, is that the thing about being a twin? Is like, I've always had someone to just like bounce immediate thoughts off of, which is probably really annoying to most people who are around us.
Y'all but just have to be like, I guess, just built in, like comfortable, like always having somebody to talk to. And so maybe that makes it easier to be on a stage or an event. But like,
Brian, you know, too, because you're from the South, I would say.
Texas is in the South.
Very southern. I'm from Louisiana,
like so it's like Louisiana is its own distinct kind of southern, and so is Texas. Very distinct. Its own distinct kind of southern.
But I think as southerners, it's like you have to be pleasant, like your family and, and the culture around you will enforce like this charm, this southern charm. Like the, it's really required that you wave and say hi and make small talk about literally anything, wherever
you're. And there's like, you always have these like go-to funny little phrases, you know, like of our great uncles, when they would come over, like we lived with our grandma in Kentucky, like on her same plot of land that her parents lived on, like, you know, generations of family all in the same like 20 mile radius, right? Mm-hmm. And like all of her brothers and sisters, 12 brothers and sisters, would come over and hang out and we'd do big family reunions and everyone has these like funny little one-liners. It's like, it's kind of like the Irish, right? It's like you have these funny little phrases that you have to have ready to go and everyone has to be a comedian. I don't know what it is.
Well, going back to McConaughey, like, in his book, he's like, the reason I'm a storyteller is because I was fighting for attention constantly. If I didn't learn how to tell a good story, nobody was going to listen to me. So
that's it.
I mean, I picked that up. I mean, if you're standing around a campfire or at the duck camp or something, you got to be able to spin a yarn if you're.
You have to. I love like we grew up with a group of friends we called the Logan County Boys. And like one of our friends, Kyle Morrison, he was the best storyteller. And no one even cared that he was completely embellishing. We were all there. We know what actually happened. And he would retell it. And it would just get bigger and funnier every time he told it. No one cared because like it's like, tell me a good story. I'd rather hear a good story than the truth. And that's horrible.
it's a comedian working out material. Once he finds the laugh lines, he's got to bump those up a little bit. It doesn't matter. It's all full of shit. Like, it's like,
And of course there's a limit to that, but I do think that there's something interesting about that. Like when you go to a conference, like we met at Epicurrents, which I saw met Dan on, but I think he's smart. And I think the conferences that do it really well, or the speakers that get invited a lot, are like the John Continos and the Draplins, who it's like, people want advice, but they also just want like a really funny, relatable talk at the end of the day, you know, like they want to laugh a little, they want to let loose, you know, like your brain can only take in so much like knowledge. Yeah. And I think if you can like temper that with a spoonful of sugar, like that's what sticks. That's what people remember. And that's how you can actually, it's like, what's the one lesson I want to impart in this talk? You know, let's try to focus on that and then just make it fun. And like,
because the first time we were invited to talk, we were like, what in the world do we have to tell anyone about? Like we do not belong on this ticket. So we did, we just like kind of self-effacingly just made fun of ourselves for about 30 minutes. And
I think that y'all might've given the dating talk. I think y'all might have given the dating talk, which was
We did it at ValueCon because Charlie Waite came up and he was like, that was freaking hilarious.
That was freaking hilarious.
But we were just like, what would be like very real, like true life from the memoirs of.
Yeah.
But we just wanted to be very real and relatable. But yeah, I don't know. I think anytime that you can imbue something with something like original that's true, I mean, it's the same storytelling techniques that they use, you know. But we just try to kind of like give it a new spin so that it was something people hadn't seen before, you know?
I mean, everybody's like sitting around like two or three beers deep after a full day of skiing. Like if you don't have an angle, if you're not a little funny, then everybody's going to be nodding off. And I think everybody was
100%.
Just,
the fire's warm. You're all cozy. Yeah. That's
always
worst.
One thing I enjoyed about Draplin. Every time he comes and gives a talk, he's always just like pretty much everyone else at the conference will be like, this is why design is so special and important. And Draplin will get up and he's like, we're just glorified plumbers. Like it is a job. Like, and I so appreciate that perspective. I was listening to Kurt Russell and his son were on Conan's podcast the other day, and Kurt Russell's exactly the same. He's like, we're working blue collar actors. Like, that's what my family was. Like, his dad was killed on Bonanza like 50 times. So one of those actors right. that was just like was the guy who man, just right? always dies on
yeah.
Bonanza.
Yeah, like the guy who dies on the horse.
Yeah, yeah. And he, you know, he made like a normal living wage. He was not like a wildly successful actor. But I just think it's like, I think it's always healthy to have that like tie back to reality. Because yeah. when you get so obsessed with your career path and doing well in your industry, which we all do, and there's a point where you can almost like treat it too sanctimoniously and, yeah. and forget, like,
drink your own Kool-Aid.
Yeah.
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 Well, yeah. when sometimes when you're a multidisciplinary, multifaceted design guru with, I mean, whatever, you know, those taglines that show up on the top of websites. Oh, sometimes,
please no.
You know,
that, like, that used to make me want to throw
yourself
something
a little too seriously.
It'd be right? like husband, think leader, or whatever.
Thought leader.
It's definitely not think leader. What is it? Thought leader.
One man think tank.
One man think tank.
It's like, I can't anymore. I know, it's like nobody wants to talk to the person who takes themselves a little too seriously. Or I don't know, maybe that's just me. So it's like, if you're trying to attract the kind of clients you want to get, I think it is best to be yourself just for that reason. Cause it's like, you know, it's
on the opposite side of that, Emina Weiner and her partner, forgetting her name, but on their deck where they explain Discovery, they specifically, or further about their brand and their studio, they were specifically like, we are not funny, we are not quirky. And I actually really appreciated that they really owned what they were. And I was like, yeah. right. Cause everyone in, I feel like in the design space is always trying to be like, we're funny, we're cheeky, right. we're sarcastic, you know? Yeah. And they were like, we're not those things. Like, right. it's like, cool.
Yeah, like, it's like, know who you are. And yeah.
yeah.
It's like,
we're,
you know,
assassins.
Exactly.
We're coming in to do a job.
Yeah. Oh, man. We're assassins.
What? So did y'all, so one of my greatest, not maybe fears, but like, and not even a pet peeve, but it's, I find that when I am designing with somebody over my shoulder that I suddenly forget all my short keys and I forget how to do things. Mm-hmm. And y'all have done it like at least twice that I know of in front of the whole world. Talk about like a critical community in the design community. What made y'all accept the invitation to like live design a logo in front of,
right?
Like, y'all were on for like 3 or 4 yeah. hours at a sprint, right? Like, y'all were
yeah.
on.
First of all, let's clarify that it wasn't the world. It was like at most 3,000 people. Like, but it was still,
that's more than the one eye that looks over me and I'm like, which one is copy and paste? Like, I can't, I forget.
How do I paste in place? I know. I'm one of those weird people. Like, have you, like, Brian, when you're stuck, I don't know what you do, but when I'm stuck and like, I need to get work done, I need peer pressure. I will go to the coffee shop and nobody gives a shit that I'm at this coffee shop. But for some reason in my mind, I'm like, they're watching me. They know I haven't done anything. I have to get something done before I leave here. And it's like, there's something in my brain that has this like, yeah. And so I think I do my best work under pressure.
That's not me. If Amy didn't say yes, I never would have done it. Yeah, well, cause I'm there just the person who just needs to like steep in a corner by myself.
So I remember watching, like, I saw the ads for that and I was like, oh, there's no way. Like, they're going to have something pre-done, or they're going to have like, or they're just going to walk through their process and like on a cooking show where it's like, and then you put the right. the turkey in the oven for 3 hours. And I just so happen to have a turkey
yeah.
right here.
Oh,
it's
here
like,
it is.
So here's where I would start outlining the type, and I'm just going to pull up this perfect version of it. No, y'all did it. Y'all were like, like, I sketched some things out and let's just start picking fonts. It was like, it was the wildest thing to watch. And I thought the bravery that would take.
The bravery.
Like,
I love it.
A little bit.
I find that to be so fun. I never feel more alive than where I'm like, everyone's watching. Let's see what happens. Like, I don't know. It's so fun to see like the process in real time. And there's something so fun about like having however many people are in the chat, like those people, everyone's like, oh, what about this? And it's honestly a gold mine. It's like the chat's throwing stuff at you. They've got great ideas. And I'm like, I just feel like there's, because to me, the thing where creatives can get in their heads the most is like overthinking, freaking out, closing the project and just being like, I can't do it. Giving up too quickly, when really it's like, just keep going and then go to sleep. That's why I like to work late sometimes if I'm really like, so just like having a hard time. It's like, do about 3 hours solid, maybe two, like get just a bunch of good ideas down on paper, even if they look terrible to you now, and just go to sleep. The fairies fix it at night.
They do.
You'll
oh
look
my
at
gosh.
It in the morning and yes, you're like, this is gold. This is gold.
Why was I giving myself such a hard time? Also, like, I will, it's almost like Russian roulette where you're like, if you sit down at 10 o'clock and you don't have anything, and this is like my method for any time I'm stuck, I'll sit down at like 10. Sometimes I'll even push it to like 11 o'clock at night and I'll start working. And it's like, if I don't come up with something, I'm not going to get any sleep. I'm going to ruin tomorrow. So the kids are still going to get up at 6:30.
Yeah.
I got to figure out how I'm going to get some sleep. And so it's like, it's not just a deadline, but it's like, it's a whole day tomorrow. It's like your life that you are like just gambling with. If you can sit down and figure something out in that short time frame.
Oh, I know. It's stressful. It is stressful.
And it still happens to this day.
Yeah. But it's like every now and again, it's like for 10 months, I'll be flying high. And then like, there'll be like those 2 months where you're just like, nothing's working. Your usual tricks don't work, you know, and you're just like, you've got that lull, that valley comes, you know, it's just part of life. It's part of being a human. It's like, it just can't work all the time. And you're going to have ups and downs and every client's not going to like things at once at any given time. You know, it's like, I don't know.
That's where falling back on the routine is so important.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, and sometimes breaking routine is like, sometimes you're just like, fuck it. I'm just going to take 2 hours off and then I'm going to come back. But that's it. That's my idea of taking 2 hours. I'm going to take 2 hours off and then I'm coming back.
My favorite thing to ask about is routine. What is like, what is y'all's like, do y'all do the wake up early or the no coffee before 10 or the got to get in the cold plunge, go run on the beach? Or like, what do y'all do? How do y'all handle the routine?
It's like, I started to realize I used to think I was really healthy because I was like, it's like, I shop at Trader Joe's. That's healthy. Trader Joe's is not healthy. Nothing healthy about Trader Joe's. And I just thought it was healthy.
Healthy looking packaging. Though. Yeah,
it's so deceptive. It's like, we used to live in Kentucky where like we ate horribly. Like it was like Lay's potato chips, Eggo waffles. You know, our mom's boyfriend would make us salt cured ham and like biscuits for dinner every night.
It wasn't like, prison
with like, and it was like, they would use the grease to make the gravy. Like it was so unhealthy. So then when we moved to California, I was like, I'm so healthy now. I shop at Trader Joe's.
But I'm starting to realize eat green stuff from time to time.
I have vegetables, you know, like what more do you want from me? But, no, I don't, I feel like my routine is just like, I mean, I have to have coffee in the morning, but, my thing is like, just sit down for 3 hours and just keep going and just see what you can get out of it. Yeah. And then give up for the day. It's like, because I feel like I'm so bad about, and when I was younger, it's like, if I'm just not feeling it, it's not working, I need to wait till tomorrow. And it's like, no, then you're really stuck. You know, you really need the time to marinate. And so I really try now to give myself that time to like stop hating it because it's just too fresh and to just like sit with it. You know,
that's such good advice. Because a lot of times I won't even start on something until I feel like I'm going to be able to get traction. Or like sometimes I won't start on something until, you know, I'll think about it and think about it and think about it. And like, I've always found that I have to put in a lot of time just letting it kind of sit and think if I want to be able to sit down and be productive.
Interesting.
But it is the best tip to just get over that. I don't know if it's ADHD. I don't know what it is, but like, I won't open the program. I won't try the font. I won't do a wireframe or lay it out. I won't do anything until I feel like I've got it. But if it's really tight and I just start, I always find that it's kind of right there. It's like, if you're willing to give it an hour or two, something will happen. You'll feel better.
Yeah.
I think that's great advice, but it's and very uninterrupted hard advice
is
to take.
Key. Oh, it's so hard to take, but I think the uninterrupted time is so important.
Yeah.
Cause honestly, as a freelancer or someone
or who, like a small boutique agency owner,
you could fill your whole day with busy work. There's always something to do. You could always say, well, this is the reason why I can't do that. I have like 10 other things to do. It's so important. But it's carving out like uninterrupted at least 2 or 3 hours at some point in your day, you know, to tackle stuff. There was a time when I would try and do like 3 hours of my creative work in the morning before I answered any emails, which was amazing when I was doing it, because emails are the fastest way to stress yourself out about 100%. All the things that you need to do. And it's like, it's not going to kill anyone if I wait till 12 noon to respond to my emails. Like I responded to my emails like at 5 yesterday. It'll be fine. Doing my creative work in the morning, like I used to love that. And then I got out of the habit. I should do it again.
Yeah.
Now I'm back on the night thing. I go through ebbs and flows, but I'm on the night. Working on the night.
Yes, Bob Seger.
That's right. Exactly. Well, that's part of the routine too. And that's my favorite is that like, as y'all will post, it's usually around 5 o'clock. I usually don't catch you before that. But like you'll crack a Coors Light. No, y'all will crack a Banquet.
Fully leaded.
Put on like a little Loretta Lynn and just let her talk to you. And then like, that's where it starts to happen, I guess. When y'all started posting country music, I was like, these girls are like, they get me.
Okay, so
they
you're
understand.
A country fan. You're a country fan then. Okay, I was curious. I was like, what does Brian listen to?
I listen to a lot. Well, so I listen to like George and Willie and Merle and like all this, all that's over here on my record collection. I inherited a lot of that from my dad. But that's then cool. I was like a college. I was like Modest Mouse and Ryan Adams and like,
oh my gosh.
Yes. Americana folk.
Wow. We, I think we're on the same wavelength like then. Yeah.
But then it got into like Phosphorescent and then like Sturgill Simpson. And then Sturgill Simpson was like a quick bridge into
back to like, Waylon.
Yeah. Waylon, but Tyler also like Childers. Tyler Childers, of course. Yeah. Of course. But it's also like opened the door to like the Morgan Wallens and the Parker McCollums. And so now I listen to like even like the country music that's not cool to listen to.
Right.
I was like, wait, because I wasn't familiar with those names. Okay. So, but it's like modern country. I have so many guilty pleasures of 90s country.
Have you heard that song, Get in the Truck?
It's the most hilarious. The thing that cracks me up, if anyone wants like a lesson in storytelling, even for brand, I think country music is hilarious because they are the masters,
first of all, of like callbacks. Like there'll be a story that has like multiple facets.
Like Tim McGraw, Don't Chase the Girl, how each verse is like, it's like, oh, and then it's like, take it's Jimmy just too Johnson.
I know.
But it's so dumb. Cheesy. But then it's like it turns into like it's talking about the daughter now and not the wife.
And then
you know,
it's talking like, about
so smart.
Yeah, don't take the girl because she's getting married. Then don't take the girl because she's dying. It's like so intense. Yeah. But I think country storytelling is like so basic and obvious. But they use so many fun tools for their
it's a three act play.
It's a three act play.
Drinking or losing your dog or like going out in the truck, like it's all like there's always that little three act arc. And when they do tie that last verse back, like when you're like, oh, that's why they named it, you know, Last Dance or something like that. It's like, I see what he did. The ones where you can almost predict what's going to happen in that third verse. It's like, oh, his mom's going to die. His mom's about to die in this verse. You know, it's like, no, it's coming.
100%. Yes. Those, I know. And like 90s. And even like I was listening, something came on the other day. It was that Ronnie Millsap, like Smoky Mountain Rain. Like remember when country went so like, remember like Kixie Love Songs and like Delilah.
The bouffant haircuts like and the wide open. Yeah.
It was like 80s power ballads like permeated through into country for a time in the 80s.
The jumpsuits, the male jumpsuits were like a big thing in like 70s, 80s country.
Oh,
yeah,
wow.
Like the one piece tight thing. Yeah. Yeah. That
it's
was
so fun.
Conway Twitty, like, all that stuff.
Yeah. Mm. Oh, I love. Yes, exactly. And there is something, I don't know. It's so funny how when people are like, country's too pop now. I'm like, look back at the 70s and 80s. It was so mainstream. Like, I think there's just always ebbs and flows to every industry. Like, I heard everyone's freaking out because Beyonce put out her country album and people are like, we can't play this on the radio. It's like, give me a break. Like, Shania Twain was so pop. Like, there's so many different eras where it's like crossed over, you know, and Elvis, all those kind of things, you know, it's
really
like, just let
what
it
Beyonce's
happen.
Gonna do.
Stop trying to resist it.
We were listening to that new song. I guess it was last night, maybe the night before, but it's only because I see it. It's like the most popular song on
Beyonce
Instagram
song?
And
it's everywhere. Yeah. Every TikTok is that song. It's so catchy. I've been singing this in Texas. I can't get it out of my head.
You can't stop. And it's not like, it's not
my
favorite.
She's from your town, apparently. She's Houston.
Third Coast. H-Town. Yeah. 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 She's, she has like figured out this new genre, I guess. I don't know what she's trying to do. And I don't know, like, if you listen to the whole song in full, I don't know if it's like, I don't know if it's her best. It might be. I haven't heard like the whole album yet. But
I haven't heard the whole album either.
Damn
yet,
if
but
it's
I love
not catchy.
Song.
Damn if it's not
so
built
good.
For TikTok. They figured it
and
out.
And I think it's also interesting because it's like, you know how like Lionel Richie or like Steven Tyler went to country because it's like that's the market you tap after you can no longer do pop anymore. It's like, all right, I guess I'll go to country. They'll have me, you know. But it's like Beyonce did it like in her, I feel like she's still in her prime very much. And she's like making the choice of like, I'm going back to my roots. I'm doing a country album. I feel like I like that she's turning that like cliche on its head. It's like, no, it's like, when TV, it's like, if you were on TV, it used to be kind of like, well, I can't do movies anymore. I guess I'll do TV. And now it's like, no, we can do big things on TV. I like people who carve their own path. I think that's interesting. Yeah.
Well, what are the dream? Like, so y'all have established this. How long have y'all been in business? This is going on over.
Since 2011. We were just realizing
11 or 12 years. Yeah.
13 years.
It's 2024.
Right. Yeah.
The 13, that's a lucky number I hear talking about country. Yeah. So 13 years in, what is like, what's the next step? What is this industry going to be? I think that's like, as kind of like the figureheads, like, tell me where this industry is going, because it's either existential crisis or like the best time to be a designer. Like, what are we looking
at? Right.
I know. I keep reading articles because I want to know too. I'm like trying to look to smarter people than I, like, Paul Worthington has a great newsletter that I'm just constantly like trying to get everyone to read his newsletter. Like, he's so smart. He doesn't take himself too seriously. He's more in marketing, but he's also very smart when it comes to brand. So Off Kilter is his newsletter.
I think he studied philosophy and economics.
Yeah.
And
very smart guy. So yeah. But I've been reading so much too. And
it's pretty much just a wild time. I am grateful that we have different irons in the fire at this moment, because it's just, I don't know. Like you said, it's more volatile than ever. And we're just kind of like trying different things. And we've always been very like frugal with our money. Like, we don't have an official office. So I am grateful that we are saving money a lot of places too. I think that's your best move. If you can't, just trim expenses as much as you can, you know,
trim expenses,
like, trim.
And then, like, I hope a lot of people have sort of listened to the diversification message too, because like, just to make sure that I've been really clear on that, there's agency, there's books, there's fonts, there's speaking engagements. There's courses. Y'all have figured out how to create at least some passive income for stability. So it's not always a feast or famine, live and die by the next client. Yeah. Right?
I will say though that these projects never start out as like, oh, this will make us great money. And it never does at first. Like, it usually is something that's sometimes, like, it's an investment of time and effort. And it's kind of like, gosh, I hope this recoups, you know? And I think it is hard for a lot of people to find their product or their course or this extra thing that they do. It's easier said than done. It's like, and a lot of times you look at there and you're like, the things that I can do, there's already a million of, like, people already have made the decks. They've already, but honestly, it's like, if you can make a better one or a one with a new like perspective, like, it's, you could still make the same things that are already out there. I mean, you know, this is a world that's ever evolving, but I think it is, it's like, those are things that you should be doing when like you have savings, you have extra time. It's not something I wouldn't recommend, like, hey, diversify and make a product or a course when it's like, I need money to pay rent tomorrow. You know what I mean? Like, at that point, that's when you really get like, you start reaching out to the past clients, reaching out to people, you know, and just letting them know, like, hey, I'm here. Like, what do you need? Like, let's work out a price that works for you. I think that's your best first goal. If you get some steady, but once you've got some good stuff going in, that's when it's fun to play. And that's when we like, okay, let's try writing this, you know, this thing or making this product, and the stakes are lower. You know?
It's kind of like the thing we were talking about earlier, like giving yourself the time to marinate, because like Jen said, if you're trying to figure out your product when you're stressed and you're like, this has to work, it almost always falls flat.
Yeah.
Cause that comes through, like, the intent comes through, so it's like, if you're instead just like creating in a place of like, oh, wow, I've not seen this before. Like, this might be something interesting I can make. Let's see what we can do with a small budget. Just like, what can we do? First iteration, first pass.
Yeah.
Not trying to throw all of your savings at it to where like, if this doesn't work, you have to like, you know,
I've always wanted to ask, like, is that how did the Lakers happen for y'all? Haven't y'all worked with the Lakers?
I'm so glad you asked, because I realized I was changing history telling this story the other day. I was like, how did that happen? Because I know for a fact we were internet stalking the whole Lakers creative team for years. So poor Jay Diaz and all the crew. But then I remember, like, we have a couple friends here that we know that work at the Ducks. And it's Jeff Ipgen, somebody that I just know locally, just from like, we used to throw an event around here called Connecting Things. And I was telling him, I was like, oh man, I cannot wait. Like, I have all these goals. Like, and I was like, I just really would love to work with a sports team, like, whether it's like rebranding or just a little project. Like, it's just like my dream goal. It still is to this day. And he's like, oh, like, I know the Lakers creative team. And I was like, what? And he was so nice to just do an email intro and be like, hey, these girls love the Lakers. Like, would love to like introduce you to. And they took us out to lunch. They gave us a tour of the Lakers facility. They were the most gracious hosts. We got to see Jeannie Buss at her office with her 17 trophies. And it was so cool. Josh Hart like walked through down the hallway. It was just so neat seeing everything.
I feel like y'all would, this was back in dribble days, but I feel like y'all would post like a doodle or something, or like a poster that you had made, or like y'all just worked and you would post about the Lakers before you had officially started working for them. It was like, just
that's the thing,
just kind of doing it to put in the reps almost.
I don't think you have to prove your fandom on certain things.
Yeah.
Sure. Like, of course everyone wants to work for the Lakers. Join the frickin' line. You know what I mean? Like, to, it's just like when people say that and then you go and look at like their portfolio and you're like, oh, but you have nothing in this realm. Like, I never would have known you even liked the Lakers. Mm-hmm. Like, you have to do a lot of work up front. I feel like when I reach out to someone, I want them to know, like, I really care. Like, I'm standing, I'm apart from the other fans. Like, I'm the biggest fan. Yeah.
You can ask me the deep cut B-side questions and I will.
Yeah. Like, ask me about Sasha Vujicic. I'll tell you about Sasha Vujicic. Like, you know, like, let's talk. Ronnie Turiaf. I want to talk about the people we don't hear about, you know, it's like, I truly, I think you have to like put in the effort on those like big dream. It's like, you can't just write into Disney and be like, hey, I'd love to get on your roster. It's
I think you and everyone else. Extra level of passion that just sets you apart. Like, and getting a little weird with it is just helpful. It's just the easiest way to do it. Like, I know everyone's like, oh, the funny subject lines, like gag, like when you do your like cold emails and stuff, but it's like, it works. Honestly, any way you can stand out from the crowd and show a genuine passion, it will always sing more than just being like very like,
but,
you know.
But I think that's, those are the big things. Like you said, like making the work you want to get, that's crucial. Having fun with it. I mean, I would do like these animations. I did a Dennis Rodman animation of all his different hairstyles where he like rotates. It took forever. It's not lucrative in any way. If somebody wants to hire me for this, like if I have to do it again, it's so much time, but like people love it. And I feel like it's one of those things when I like, I reach out to sports people or like I meet, they're like, oh, I love that. I saw that.
And it's like, that's it.
You can't exactly.
They've gotta see you.
You can't think about the time spent. It has to be for the, just the enjoyment, because that's when you let your, you get let down. It's like, you're putting too many expectations on it. It's like, just enjoy it.
What's the ROI of my passion project?
It's like, but Brian, what you said is like, when we worked on like fun little for fun illustrations, like you were saying, well, we watched games for like 2 years before anything came of it. And it was not by any means that I had, could have ever planned. It was basically me telling my friend, Jeff Ipgen, I love the Lakers, and him saying, I know the guy.
I went to school with him.
Yes, I went to Long Beach State. Let me give you an intro.
Okay, Brian, I have a question. What's your weirdest trajectory of getting a client?
I love these stories.
The weirdest one?
Most unexpected.
Well, I'm actually, so I've got a story about one that I just started working on. So big fan of this brand out of Austin, Texas. It is a veteran owned supplement company. It's called Bear Performance Nutrition. This guy is, he started the company like in his college dorm room and was stationed in the military in, South Korea, which is the scary one.
North Korea is a scary one.
North Korea. Okay. So South Korea. He was over there and he starts YouTubing about his company. And so for the last 10 years, he's built like a million followers on YouTube and other social channels. And so in Austin, this company is hot shit and they're blowing up all over the place. They just sponsored the Austin Marathon.
Oh, wow.
I just randomly wanted to do the Murph workout. Do y'all know that? It's like a CrossFit workout where you, it's miserable. You do it for Memorial Day. You have to run a mile and then it's like 300 squats, 200 push-ups and 100 sit-ups. And then 100 pull-ups and then another mile.
Consecutively?
Yeah. All at
or
once.
Like well, over you can, a month.
You can break it up however you want, but I was like, okay. Like good times are in the 15, 20 minute range. Like, like 20, 30 minute range. And it took me like 55 minutes. I was there for a long time trying to do this workout.
55. I'd be there for 2 days.
Well, I went, same thing that I was talking about earlier. I went to the gym an hour before it was going to close. So I had to do it in an hour. Like if I didn't get it done in an hour, I would have put in all that time for nothing. So I just kept pushing for that. Anyway, long story short, I looked up a video on how to do it, which is like just how I figure out how to do anything these days is watch YouTube. And, I watched this video of him doing it, and then his video started showing up in my feed. And I had been a big fan of Casey Neistat. My son and I watched it, and when he stopped making his videos, we didn't have anything else to watch on YouTube. Mm-hmm. So we would start randomly watching these videos of this guy in Austin. Mm. And I just so happened to do a project with Timmy Ham towards the end of last year. Mm. Timmy was working for him, and he was looking for a web designer. And Timmy texts me, and I don't know if y'all know Timmy Ham well, but Timmy Ham texts are the best in the world. It's usually a voice note. And he's like, yo, what's up, bro? I hope you're having a great day. Anyway, like that was my neighbor. I just wanted to tell you something, you know. So they're kind of meandering, but he sends this text message and he says, this would be a fun project. He sort of screenshots the request. And I was like, hell yeah, it would be a fun project. I don't know how to get an intro. And he sends me back a screenshot. He's, you know, you need to talk to Brian Athey. He could be your web designer. Within like a day, I was on the phone with him. Within another day, I was on the phone with his development team. And then I went to Disney World and I didn't hear anything back. And I called him and I said, no pressure, but I'm really into this. I'd love to work on it. He said, man, we're going through a bunch of stuff at the company. I got to put it on hold. And we've all heard that. Like when they put it on hold, that's either a soft no or it's enough time that they're going to forget about you.
Right. Yeah. Or they might not be there next week.
Yeah, exactly. So I had already I had had my week to think about it. And I had been at Disney World. Like Walt Disney was my, I was the kid that whose hero was Walt Disney. It wasn't Michael Jordan or it was Walt Disney.
Yeah.
And so I just had it all worked out in my head. And I thought, if I don't shoot a shot, I'm not going to get this work. And so I just kind of made a homepage and sent it to him. I did a Loom and I sent it to him. And he says, within 24 hours, he called me and he was like, hey, man, this changes everything. This is exactly what I wanted. So let's do this. We're going for it. Like,
he just didn't even have the time to think about it.
He was just like, wow, this was it.
Yeah.
This is it. So that's my most recent off the top of my head. Interesting.
There's a case for spec work. Like, I'm not saying make it a business practice. That would not be sustainable. I know everybody's like, never do free work. It's like, I hate any sort of really definitive rule because honestly, it's like, life is jazz, baby. I'm not kidding.
But I love that. Talk about the one-liners. You just got them and just see them a little bit.
But it's like you were saying, I think that's why I enjoy being a small studio is we can be flexible. And if we really want something, we can do thing where it's like, we just propose it. And like we were working on this project recently where we're like, oh, motion would be so cool with this, but they did not budget for it. They did not ask for it, but we're like, I know it'd be so freaking amazing. And if we show them, I think they will be so won over that they will have to extend the scope to do it. And so we're going to do a spec motion, not to just give it to them, but if they like it, you know, then that might lead to another big project where it would be worth it to have invested in that. To everyone who's like, we'll never do free work. It's like, how much easier is me doing that to maybe get another project with an existing client that already knows and trusts us as opposed to spending a bunch on some random, cold emails for people that I don't know. And that we have no rapport or foundation built, you know? I see it as investment.
Sure. I think it's a third rail to talk about free work because people are very opinionated about it. And I don't think that I wouldn't do it for everybody. I do it a lot in my neighborhood. Like we were talking about favorite sports branding. Like my daughter's team was the Swifties and I did all of their stuff for her second grade basketball team. There's always free work to do, but there is the occasional client that is on that bucket list. Like we're talking about. Mm-hmm. And sometimes if you can get all the way up to the door and they don't invite you in, sometimes you've got to set yourself apart and kick that door in. Like sometimes you got to figure it out and it might be, it might be the right conversation or it might be just an idea into your head. That's the thing is that I feel like designers, because they can see it and because it's all put together in their head, it's a no-brainer. You should hire me to do this.
Right.
But you know, from working with clients and really anybody that's not in this sort of visual aesthetic field, that they don't see it.
It's so true
that it's this whole thing in your head. It's not just your logo. Mm-hmm. Have you thought about how it works here? And then this great tagline. And what if we did it on this? They can't extrapolate that. My head immediately does it. And I forget that a lot of the times who I'm talking to is not that they don't have
the brains
that
wired
excitement.
Different. You're right though. And it's so worth it for those moments where it's the big rom-com gesture. It's this is the dream. This is the person. You only get one shot, you were saying. And it's and they're turning around and leaving and you haven't said what you wanted to say. It's those are those moments where it's you would shoot yourself in the foot if you didn't do everything you could to try and get it, you know?
Right.
And it's
not encourage somebody to just you hear the stories all the time, the one in a million anecdotes where somebody sent in their shoe design and then Nike was I'm plucking you and you're going to do a new line. That occasionally, very rarely happens.
You're right.
But if you are to the point that you are almost there.
Yeah. So close to the finish line. Yes.
It's just, sometimes it's worth it to be oh, let's just add a little motion or, have you thought you need to talk to my video guy or, you know, what'd be really cool is if we turn this into X, Y, or Z. I think that's That's the value add that turns those little engagements into these long-term ones that you...
Oh, I think 100%. And always with our projects, we tend to add things that we didn't say we would and weren't in scope, but we just kind of gift it. We say, oh, here's a gift. That way they don't really... Mm-hmm. It's like, there's no revisions, but it's just a gift, you know? And we'll just add little things in that we wanted to do that we didn't think about initially. They didn't ask for, but we're just like, this is just going to be cool and it won't be hard.
And it'll be like really amazing.
And it'll be really amazing. You know? And it always leaves them so happy. And then, you know, that spurs other ideas that are paid ideas. You know, yeah. It's like we aren't just doing stuff that's going to like break our bank. But it's like, if it's easy for us to do and it brings joy and it really makes the experience that much better, it's like, why not?
Yeah.
That leads to that testimonial that's just like stellar for the website, which leads, it's just all, you know, cumulative.
That's one more pro tip for the clients is that like we ride on that momentum as well. Like that wave, just we're trying to build it. And when you get excited and when you feel it's all happening, like it's really hard not to just throw in
the
little extras every once in a while.
Yeah.
Like, I had this t-shirt idea and I know we didn't talk about it, but we could do a whole merch line. And it's like,
yeah,
wow.
It's planting the seeds. Yeah. It's planting the seeds for sure.
I've gotten to the point in my career where I'm just not worried about the formula every time. Like I just want to have fun doing it. And I think that's what I admire so much about y'all. Just the kind of the differentiator of like, this can be fun too. It can show in the work and it can show in the experience. It can show in the process. Like y'all got that dialed in. I think I learned
this
that from you.
Most,
I read it in a book.
Most fun
I read
job.
It in a book somewhere. Freelancing business and stuff.
I think there was a book that said something about it. Yeah.
That's right. So
there's this guy on TikTok.
Go ahead.
Oh, there's this guy on TikTok who goes around and he finds homemade signs. Like it'll be like
Garage
the signs
sale.
You see on like a lamppost.
Yes.
And calls himself a vigilante designer and he'll redesign like their little like, hey, room for rent. And it's got the little things tear off to the bottom and he'll like redesign it really nice and put it back up. And he does a TikTok about it. And I just think it's such a fun, clever way to get attention and just show off his skills, but also like help the community.
Help the community.
Yes, I love it.
I've got to go find that account and like put it in the notes or something because he's also a badass designer. Like
he's
crushes
really
those. It's like dog walking and like movers and cleaning services. It's like he did one where he like turned the whole cleaning service into a superhero squad that I thought was so great.
That's the great thing about his idea. And I think this is where some people get lost on passion projects is like, think about a way you can help somebody else because it just makes it so much bigger than yourself. Mm-hmm. And it's actually like going towards something. Like if you're really stuck on like, you just don't know what to do for your passion project or something that's like more self-initiated to kind of like get your name out there or like do some work you're proud of. It's like, find something you believe in and like, you know, put your efforts into that.
Help your friends build their business.
Watch this here. I'm a professional podcaster now. That is service. And we're going to use that as the third act for our country song that loops all the way back to the service industry when what we learned is waiters. That's it.
I know. But okay. The chorus is, can I help you? The chorus is, ma'am, can I help you? I don't know. It's something like that. Okay. I'm going to be thinking on it.
All right. New album coming out. Brian Athey and the Hood Sisters.
There it is.
We're going to be at the Grand Ole Opry in just a couple of months. Get your tickets. In the meantime, y'all have got a new book. You said, Fabus 2, or is it a new
second edition? Yes,
second
we're working on it right now. We're hoping that we'll have it out in like late April, maybe. Mm-hmm. So yeah, fingers crossed. It's so hard when you're running like a client's, you know.
Well, what about do you want to put a date on your website so we have to hold you to it? When is that?
The website is almost done. The website will probably launch next week.
Yes,
but when the book is way too. We've tried so hard, but. Literally like 4 deadlines have passed on the book. So
okay.
I have no clue.
That's okay. It's all going to work out. Like when the time is right, it will all come together because I'm sure that there's tons that's changed since the first edition, right? Have y'all added more?
That's the thing is like, we updated it a couple of years ago just to make sure like, you know, things were like absolutely relevant. And now we're like, wow, we have like extra chapters and we're like trying to add in a lot of extra stuff of just like, you know, you work with bigger brands, you start to realize like the patterns and I don't know, just the more you do it, there's just so much to learn. Like I was curious before, I don't know if we're like running out of time, but like you've talked to like 10 people now. You must be seeing some like very strong overarching themes. Like what is the like main overarching theme or like overarching takeaway that you seem to get from like each of these podcasts?
That nobody asked me questions. No, like what you just said.
How dare they?
So let's see, overarching themes. So I do think that I talk to a lot of like more established designers, I think. And so these themes of like trying to find enjoyment in the work, bringing that enjoyment to the client experience, being like not so rigid, but more adaptable in your process.
Yeah. You know,
like Mark was, I talked to Mark Himian, who is like, he was a gem and like just opened my mind so much to like what these conversations can actually get at. You know, poor Bill Kenny, I talked to him first and I was like, let's talk about your book and your process and your agency. And by the time I was talking to Mark, we were like talking about psychedelics and God, you know, it was like, it was this full spectrum, but
that's very Mark.
Yeah. But a lot of folks are, I think very, they look at these designers, the ones that I've been very fortunate to interview, and there's sort of this like must be nice mentality, or there is a, I really have to like, I'll just charge more and be like them, or I'll just hustle harder and I'll be like them. And it's sort of a, I want to be like them mentality. I'm like that too, with a lot of these guys that I'm interviewing. But like when I talk to Crystal Bennett, who's a social media influencer, or when I talk to Dan, who like has worked for all these amazing companies, there's never like a perfect scenario or a perfect client. It seems that whether you are, you know, doing a passion project for your daughter's basketball team, or it's, you know, all the way up to the upper echelon clients, it's kind of a grass is greener thing. There's always going to be the work that has to get done and the hurdles of having to do it. And if people are spending so much of their time trying to get there, they will miss kind of the fun of the journey. It's not so much like once you reach that destination, you might be surprised that it looks a whole lot like the path to get there.
People are like, what's it like? I'm like, it feels the same. It feels the same. That's what you start to realize is most companies work about the same. It's like, you know, I love what you said about flexibility though. I think that's something that a lot of like people who start out in their business, they're like, no, we have to have a process. And it's like, it has to go like this. And I have to respect my own boundaries if they're going to respect me. And it's like, there is a level of that of like I respect me, so you need to respect me. But then there's also a level of like, okay, I get the best out of you when we do video calls or phone calls or meetings. Like, we can handle a few extra meetings instead of emails, you know? I love that.
Yeah. It's very much to me, you know, it's been a really fun experience. And like, I'm truly blessed that like I've gotten to talk with the folks that I have, and it feels to me like, you know, there's sort of these folks with a lot of followers and a lot of momentum and a lot of clients. And then there are a lot of folks that want that, and it creates kind of this toxic space a bit, in our industry, where if you're charging too much, I don't like you until I'm charging that much. And then like,
I'll sell a course on it.
you got that client, but everybody's sort of like jockeying for position. And because you have your way, it's almost like your orthodoxy. You have to be like, well, this is the only way to do it. And I'm going to be critical of anybody else. And, you know, I've said it before, but I don't know if that's how like guys in my neighborhood in oil and gas are, or like guys that are accountants or guys that are in home lending. Like, I don't think that they're constantly looking at what other people make and being mad at them for making it. Or I don't think that they're all constantly like trying to like prove themselves in a hurry. I think that's a big takeaway, not just from the podcast, but from talking with a lot of folks, is that like designers, I feel like, are antsier than ever. Like, they feel like it's got to happen right now. And I think one of the best things about talking to y'all and a lot of the folks I've talked to, like, not only has it been a years long process to finally kind of rise above and get the clients that you want, but even then there's still anxiety and scarcity and frustration and worry. And I don't know, those are the fun things that I've gotten to discover.
It's true. That's the same thing over and over again. Yeah. Really, the only thing that structure and boundaries help is like for your own confidence to know, I am doing this right.
Yeah.
It's just, this is part of it, you know? But yeah, your coping mechanisms just get better, hopefully, or worse, if you know, but I mean, the goal is that they get better, but it's true. It's the same thing over and over again, and learning to find the joy in it and like keep getting excited about it is huge. Yeah.
Plus, I think there's something more rewarding to the slow grow, because I think there's always a tendency of like, if something's too cool and so ubiquitous, it's like so you said, fast. It's like society almost wants to be like, okay, they had their turn. Like, oh, enough of that.
You know? Get out of here.
And I honestly was like always so thankful that that never happened, because like, I just always look at celebrities and I'm just like, how awful must that be? Like, I'm sure that there's, it's also great to be rich, don't get me wrong, or whatever, sure, to be known, but it's
personal,
like, to
chefs
be
getting paid to work out. That's yeah, gotta be fun. But right, like getting your picture taken everywhere. Yeah.
But then you see like poor people like Jonathan Taylor Thomas. It's like, he comes out of hiding and someone gets a picture of him. They're like, unrecognizable.
How did we get here? What is this relating to?
What I'm saying is like, if you're so popular, oh, then you're constantly scrutinized. Like, you're no longer a human.
I see what you mean.
And so it's like, I think there's something to be said for like growing slowly, just doing consistently good work. And I always say this, but like having a career like John Turturro or Stanley Tucci or whoever, where it's like, you know that this person is going to do great character work, or even like a Paul Giamatti, mm-hmm, where it's like, yeah, you love the movies he's in, but he's not gotten an Oscar, or I guess it's not an Oscar, a Golden Globe till now. So it's
that's
like,
right. Oh yeah. Did he just win for,
he won for Holdovers.
He didn't win for that John Adams series. Oh my gosh. He didn't win for that.
Oh, I don't know. Oh, maybe. I never saw that one. That was it good?
Yeah, so good. So yeah, good. It was like one really? Of those okay. HBO.
Yeah. That was one of the big
like mini series.
Yeah. He plays John Adams, and it's, oh my gosh, it's so good.
He's so good in everything, right? There's always those actors though where you're just like, oh, they're in it, I know I'll love this, you know? And it's like, maybe they're not the star, but it's like, you just know they're going to give you like a great performance, you know? So it's like, I've always wanted to be more like that. Somebody, you know, even like a Willem Dafoe, or they can take more maybe like stranger roles, because it's like their whole career won't tank if they do one movie that everyone hates, you know? It's just like, I don't know. I wouldn't wish for any kind. I don't know. I would never wish for immediate stardom. And I don't think any designer should either. It's like, get your, you know, mistakes out, and your like, try things and find your style, give it a couple years, and just find a great community and find a couple of really great clients that keep coming back, and you will have such a rewarding life. Like, as far as career goes, you know,
That's great. That's the sentiment to end it on, because that is so well said. I don't know if you can say that better. Like, there is a lot more to this, that if you can find your rhythm, and if you can get comfortable in the fact that it's not here yet, the journey will be so much more rewarding, and it's very likely to come. If you're doing good work and you're having fun doing it and you're building that community, what are you waiting for? Like, it's going to happen. So yeah, enjoy it.
Enjoy it.
Thank y'all so much. Go crack a Coors and put on some records for me, or turn around and play the piano. I do want to, so we've got the new site that's potentially coming out. Can y'all tell everybody how they can find you? Main website, individual handles, just in case they don't already. If you're not following the Hood Sisters, who are you? Come on. I'm putting it up on the screen right now. It's sliding.
We're hoodspadesign.com, and then at hoodspadesign on most things. But if you search Hoodspa, you'll find us.
Yeah. Hoodzpah. Yeah, we're pretty much, we're on everything now. We're even on TikTok. We're over there making a fool of ourselves on TikTok. So.
We're acting a fool.
We're everywhere.
Thank y'all so much for bringing up Jonathan Taylor Thomas. I've been waiting for the Jonathan Taylor Thomas reference for 12 episodes now.
Yes.
And it made my day.
Day again.
But the Chicago Bulls shirt and the Jonathan Taylor Thomas reference and the 90s country reference have just got me feeling all the best ways going into my evening. So thank y'all.
Thanks for having us on, Brian.
Thank y'all so much for the time. It's such a pleasure, and I can't wait for everybody to hear this. It's a blast.
That was a blast.
Thank y'all. It was a blast. All right. Bye, everybody. Bye, Hood Sisters. Talk to y'all later.
Bye.
Thanks so much for tuning into The Creative Brief. Be sure to follow Jen and Amy. And while you're at it, subscribe to this podcast wherever you're listening. We just crossed the 200 subscriber mark on YouTube, and I cannot thank you enough for helping me spread the word and grow this podcast. Now, be sure to tune in next week. My guest is Brett Williams of Design Joy. It's as good as you think it's going to be. And until then, thanks for listening. I'm Brian Athey. I'll see you next time.